This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio, your trusted source for the information you need to take control of your health and your life. No complicated medical speak, just straight talk about eating healthier without giving up the foods you love. Now, here's the host of Eat Great, Live Well Radio, food psychology coach and best-selling author, Janelle McCauley.
Hi, and welcome to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm Janelle McCauley, and I'm so glad you decided to spend the next hour with me. My promise to you is that if you take action on what you hear in today's conversation and each week, you will transform your health and your life. We've got another great show for you today, so grab a pen and paper and your favorite beverage, and let's get started. My guest today is nutrition consultant and health coach Amy Griffith. Through completely customized programs, including recipes, pantry clearouts, grocery store tours, nutrition education, and cooking demonstrations, Amy helps individuals prepare and love healthful and nourishing meals that heal. Amy believes that nutrition is the foundation that supports overall health and wellness, that quality food is the key to enjoying, preparing, and eating it, and that every person needs unique guidance and support to change behaviors that aren't serving them. Amy ultimately leads her clients to their own understanding of what healthy is and helps them discover vibrant health and happiness. Today, she'll be discussing healthy desserts and picking the right sugars for your health. Like most people, I have a sweet tooth, so I'm really looking forward to the great tips and recipes that Amy's going to share with us on today's show. Welcome, Amy.
Thanks so much for having me, Janelle.
I'm really excited about our conversation today, and I'd like to start by asking you to tell our listeners just a little bit more about your background and how you got interested in health and nutrition.
Yeah, that's always a great question. I had ultimately found in my 20s that I was always uncomfortable in my stomach and my digestion, and I never really made any sort of a link to food or stress at all. I just thought that was how I'd always felt, and there was always issues when I ate certain foods, and that was just how it was going to be. And then I saw a post on some message board for a holistic nutritionist, quote unquote. And I come from a family of doctors, so that sounded a little strange to me, sounded kind of questionable, but there's a picture of the woman, and she looked really beautiful and happy and vibrant and looked like someone I could get along with as a friend. So I signed up with her, and long story short, I cooked kale for the first time and basically healed my gut through eating certain foods. No drugs, no supplements, and figured out that I had some intolerances and some foods just didn't serve my body. And then everything about the energetics of food, et cetera. So it really opened my eyes to the connection between how the body functions and what makes up our bodies and food. And food is what makes up our bodies. So that really turned my personal quest to healing my body on its head and then ultimately turned me into a nutritionist myself. I went back to school and got really passionate about it. And here I am today. I've been practicing for about 3 years. So it's been quite a journey.
It sounds like it. And I think there's a lot of people that don't make the connection between what they're eating and what they're doing and how they feel. They just think it's normal. There's nothing they can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's common, but it's not. It shouldn't be normal. I absolutely agree.
I love the fact that you found an answer and then really turned that into passion, because once you shift from not feeling well to feeling better or really feeling great, it just opens up another whole world for you.
Absolutely. And I had to sort of give my body that chance to tell me what was going on. And that's one of the hardest things that there is to do, and that what I help my clients do is to really give their body a chance to really tell them clearly, you know, hey, I need some help here. There's some chronic issues going on, and there's so much we can do for those chronic issues with food and food alone.
There is. And I think once people understand and learn to listen to their body, they can very quickly, after they eat something, they can start to tell whether it agrees with them or doesn't agree with them, and they can start to identify symptoms much quicker once you get in tune with your body and with how the food fuels it.
Absolutely. That's one of the beauties, too, of things like an elimination diet or, you know, when you really give your body that chance, then you're empowered forever. And, you know, I don't like to see my clients past a year, maybe, depending on their condition, if it's Crohn's disease or an autoimmune disease, because they have the tools that they can use forever and ever to drop back into really making sure that they're feeling their best, whether they go on vacation or things get hectic for a while and food falls to the wayside, they can always regroup and get back to what they know will serve them. So, I couldn't have said it better myself than how you articulated it, for sure.
Thank you. And I love being able to teach and talk to people who can teach people to really take control of their health. I like to ask each of my guests what motivates them, something we call your big why. So what is your big why, and how has it motivated you to live healthier and to teach others to do the same?
Yeah, that is a wonderful and very powerful question. I think one of the things that really woke me up to understanding the body and nutrition was really questioning everything we're told in the media, by friends, by family, and people that are asking, you know, telling us what's good for us, as if we're all the same genetically, you know, as if our personalities are all the same, as if our body types and our ethnicities are all the same. So for me, it's really, you know, why I do this work is to really help empower people to know their own truth and what's the best for their body, and not to seek out information to a certain degree from the internet and from the media, to first to listen to themselves and gain an understanding of what they need, and also how to do research, what to read, what to listen to, and why some of the more loud, you know, over-marketed things aren't maybe the best options for them. So it's really just empowering the person so that they don't always have to depend on me and they're not always asking me these questions that they could probably answer themselves if they really sat and thought about what they know is true and what they think is right. There's so much information out there and so many ways to get that information. So I'm really excited when I meet people that just have no grasp on what is their truth, and I can really bring that out of them and help them to really be confident in that. And that permeates out to everything in their lives and in their health and wellness.
It does, and there is so much information out there, and it's important to wade through it. And there's a lot of things that are touted as quick overnight fixes or solutions. And, you know, I tell people, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, and you really need to take a step back and look at the source, look at the data behind it, look at how they came to that conclusion. A lot of times it's really just an opinion or it's marketing hype. They want to get attention, and they do get a lot of attention, but it doesn't mean it's the right thing to do for your body to really get healthy.
Absolutely. And, you know, we do live in a world where people have to make a living and make money, and that's, you know, understandable, the way we want to live our lives. But there are drives behind certain products and certain programs that might not be as well-intentioned and altruistic as they should be. And I think that's exactly right. People just really need to understand what is the best for them first, and then seek out what might help support what their truths are, instead of just being led blindly.
Absolutely. And one of the topics, which is why I'm so excited to be talking to you, is on sugars and sweeteners. So I want to ask you, there's so many natural sweeteners out on the market today. Agave, cane juice, honey, stevia, even plain white sugar. Are there really differences between all of them, and are some better than others, and are there some that people should really avoid altogether?
Yeah, those are all great questions, and it is very confusing, especially with how sugars are labeled. And sometimes sugars are labeled different, evaporated cane juice, etc., and they all do mean the same thing. And there are also different forms of sugar and different glycemic numbers that are given to those sugars, or it's the number that's given that tells us how fast it will spike our blood sugar. So one sort of umbrella statement I like to tell people is, if you can't make it in your kitchen or grow it in your backyard, essentially, maybe you shouldn't eat it all the time. Everything in moderation. So you could raise bees in your backyard, and you could get the honey from those bees. Now, honey, for example, is an all-natural sweetener. If it's a raw, you know, natural honey, which could be marketed, you know, but honey in its most natural form is also very, very dense, and it's very, very sweet. So even if it has a higher glycemic number, which it does, you don't have to use that much of it. So that's, we'll get into the desserts later on, but I also help people to understand how much sugar they should add to something just to make it sweet enough, just to make it satisfying enough, so that they're not, you know, adding a cup of white sugar to a batch of chocolate chip cookies just because that the chemistry of that recipe asks for it. But honey, for example, is one of those natural flavor agents. Dates, I love to talk about dates, and not necessarily date sugar, because again, you're taking out some of the nutrients when you're refining something, when you're refining sugar. There are things in that product, when you refine it, that are stripped down so that your body just takes that sugar on and uses it for energy too quickly, and it spikes your blood sugar too quickly. That's also, you know, a separate issue than, for example, non- or lower-calorie sweeteners or chemical sweeteners, which I think we'll talk about later on. But honey, dates, fruit. It's funny because people say, well, I love desserts. What are some dessert ideas? And I say, how about a half a mango for dessert with some, you know, homemade whipped cream or something without any sugar to it? And once people understand how their taste buds can work and how we might recalibrate those taste buds, they can really drop into thinking that more natural sugars are sweeter. So I always just go for making sure dates are in the house, honey's in the house. We might talk about Splenda and or stevia, which is a quote natural sweetener, but it's a non-calorie sweetener. But also what sweeteners do to the body, even if we're not getting a caloric load on the body, our tongue has receptors on it, and those receptors talk to the rest of the body, and they talk to the brain. So the brain can essentially help the insulin spike even if we aren't getting a caloric intake. So that can be tricky because we're told, you know, diabetics are safe to eat, to drink Diet Coke and NutraSweet because they aren't caloric in nature, but they have such a hypersweet taste that the body thinks that's a sweet taste that needs to, that we need to have insulin to manage. So that can be a little bit of a danger as well.
Interesting. So what we're going to do is we're going to take just a real short break, but I want to come back and continue this conversation. I've got a whole bunch of questions that have come up just on what you shared in the last few minutes. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Most people know UPS, but did you know we offer expert advice and time-saving tools for startups?
I have a big idea, and now I have big decisions to make.
We can help you get there.
Startups need all the help we can get.
Talk with our experts and find technology that can help you automate tasks so you can do more, faster.
To grow, I need help saving time and money.
Have a one-on-one consultation with a specialist at no cost, and our shipping and tracking tools are free as well.
I want to be more efficient and streamline operations.
You can even sign up for UPS Smart Pickup, which will automatically notify a driver whenever you create a shipment online.
Wow, so I can spend more time focusing on the big picture?
You focus on your business while we take care of the logistics.
Putting more energy toward my dreams, that would be huge.
Get expert advice for your growing business. See how at ups.com/startups.
I love logistics.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
You're listening to Janelle McCauley on the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley. Today we're talking with Amy Griffiths with Embrace Health and Nutrition, and we're talking about sugar, and I want to continue that conversation because I've got so many questions from some of the information you shared and some of the things I've heard. Before the break, we were talking about stevia, and I know we hear a lot about that. Are there any pros and cons or anything else we should know about that?
Yeah, so stevia is actually a green leaf, and if you pick it, grow it, pick it, and dry it, it tastes sweet. It tastes like a sweetener. It has a bit of a different taste than just sugar. It has a little bit of a bitterness, and it's hyper sweet. So you don't need that much of it if you're sort of going for something that you don't want any calories involved with, or you want to, you know, a lot of paleo people might use it. They might use an extract of it. But again, there is a bit of a danger in how you're treating your taste buds and what your taste buds expect from that kind of really high, very sweet, over-sweetened taste. It's not a very natural taste. You know, I tell people if they're using it in moderation, and maybe they're putting, and it's also, extract is very, very potent. So you really only need a drop of it. If you're really looking to change how your body functions calorically with carbohydrates and sugary carbohydrates, that can be sort of a way to wean off of those things while having that sweet taste and what I call recalibrating the taste buds. And then hopefully you'd get to the point where you have an apple, you know, a Fuji apple or a plum in season, and just knocks your socks off. It's sweet enough for you. So I don't, you know, toss stevia out, but it shouldn't be sort of used to kind of fuel that fire of the need for such hyper-sweet things, because that can also kind of domino effect out to, oh gosh, nothing's sweet enough, then I need my Diet Coke, and then I need, you know, a lot of hyper-sweet things all the time, and it becomes a chronic issue.
Can you talk just a little bit about agave? And because I hear a lot about that, that's kind of one of the ones you see more of and you hear about. So can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, agave is a great one. There are a lot of syrups out there like agave, brown rice syrup, etc. These are also byproducts of, you know, plants or other foods. Brown rice syrup is an extract. You know, it takes a lot to get that brown rice syrup from brown rice. Agave is from an agave plant that you'd make tequila out of, essentially. And it's, again, highly, you know, processed and heated down from this plant. Agave was, you know, a few years ago became this very lower calorie, better sugar alternative. And so a lot of people would use it. And once you hear, oh, it's a better sugar alternative, it's lower calorie, people tend to use more of it because they think it's sort of safe and they can kind of go overboard with it. Then there was a study that came out and some controversy around agave because there were some tests done on some products that had been shipped up from the agave had come from Mexico. Other countries might have different ways of regulating their food supply than we do. And they had found that they tested within the agave syrup that there was actually high fructose corn syrup that was being added to some of the products as a backfiller, which is a lot cheaper, so that you have maybe, you know, 10% agave, perhaps. I'm not sure how much was in this batch or what they tested. And then you can backfill it with a lot cheaper material, and then you can sell it at a premium. So that was a little bit scary. And again, agave is very, very sweet. If you're going to use it, you don't need that much of it. And it's a byproduct of something else, and it's been highly refined. When you eat it, it will go through your system pretty quickly, as opposed to dates, for example. If you're eating a whole date, there's a lot of fiber involved. There's some other nutrients there. So that slows down how that affects your blood sugar. And dates are also very, very sweet and very, very dense and sticky, so you don't maybe need a lot of them. You know, one great snack is I take those big, juicy, yummy medjool dates, three or four of them, and I stuff them with goat cheese or coconut butter or a walnut or an almond, And that's a great snack. You've got some carbs, some great fiber, some fat and protein in there. So the more unrefined a sugar is, the better. I should also say, when you're looking at nutrition labels and you're looking at different sugars, you know, the first couple ingredients are there's the largest number of that ingredient in that recipe or in that product, as you might know. And they kind of trick you with different fancy names for sugars when it's just sugar. It's the same thing, whether it has maybe a higher or lower caloric density, that's fine, but it is just a sugar. So, for example, evaporated cane juice, that's just sugar. That's white sugar that's been, you know, evaporated. The water's been taken out and the fiber's been taken out. And if you can't pronounce it and it sounds like a sugar that might have a fancy name, but it sounds a little bit more of like a chemical substitute, that's probably not something you should eat all the time either. And when I say all the time, I kind of mean in moderation, 90-10, 90% of the time you're trying to eat really well. 10% of the time, who really cares? Eat whatever you want.
That really helps quite a bit because there's so much information about sugar out there. And I just want to go back to one point that you made because I think it's really important for people to understand this. Often we use more because they think it's safe or they think it's healthy. When it says, you know, low fat on the packaging, that doesn't mean you can eat the whole package. It doesn't mean, sure, you know, a serving size is a serving size. Don't eat more because you think it's got fewer calories. It's still doing things to your body that it probably shouldn't be, you know, you shouldn't be eating as much because it's not doing things that are healthy.
Exactly.
You talked a couple times and mentioned it, so I'd like to talk about it. Recalibrating your taste buds to be more sensitive to sweets. How does that work and what are the advantages of doing that?
So that's another great question, and that sort of delves into how we think about artificial sweeteners and how our bodies react to artificial sweeteners. For example, aspartame is used in Coke and other sodas, and that's a low-calorie sweetener, but it is approximately 200 times sweeter than sucrose or table sugar, and that's very, very, very sweet if you think about it, 200 times sweeter. And when we get to the point where we need that much sweet in our life, it's really hard to cut back on not wanting that anymore going through our bodies all the time. They did some studies and tested the brain where they tested how the brain reacted to cocaine, the drug cocaine, and what parts of the brain lit up and how powerful it was versus white powdered sugar. And white powdered sugar lit up the brain way more effectively than cocaine, which is pretty crazy to think about. You know, the pleasure points it hit were so apparent and so strong. So the need and the addictive need for that sugar is really, really powerful. And it's not so much that, you know, I get a lot of clients who they're so self-deprecating because they think they have so much control over that sugar that they willingly go for it. They willingly grab it. And it's really a chemical dependency that we get. You know, just like caffeine, we have our coffee in the morning, the next day we might not. We might get a little bit of a headache because we are dependent on that caffeine for that stimulation. So one of the things I do with some of my clients is I help them, if they're willing and if they're ready, essentially, to sort of kick that habit, we can talk about a food cleanse. Now, I don't really like the word cleanse or the, you know, detoxification or fasting because I don't practice those. I don't use those in my practice. I think in different scenarios they can be very appropriate, completely depending on the person and the case. But with some of my clients individually or in groups, it's really just simplifying the diet, eating fruits, vegetables, high quality meats and proteins, beans, grains, taking out some of the common allergens, for example, gluten, dairy, and also taking out food products and refined sugar products so that you really, and it takes at least 3 or 4 days for your body to kind of come off of that, come down from that. You feel a little nauseous. You might not feel as hungry for other things. You might not want those savory foods. You might feel really tired, brain fog. There might be a major, you know, detox going on in your body from that sugar, and people don't really relate that as what they would relate to maybe alcohol or drugs, but it can be even more powerful. So once they get past those couple days, there's this freedom there, and they really feel like when they do have, you know, grapes or when they do have an apple, that it tastes so sweet, and it's very exciting because then you feel like you're on the other side of that habit, and it's pretty quick what the body can do to get that out of your system. And then those pleasure points get hit by very natural foods, and you're sort of on your way. So that's a really great way to help people if they're, again, if they're ready. You kind of have to have a mindset around, okay, let's do this. It's going to hurt for a couple of days, but it'll be worth it in the end. And it's really effective to helping people come off of that hyper-sweet taste. One of the studies that I really glommed onto, a report of a study, and it was in October of 2012, was there was a study that was released at 3 p.m. on a Wednesday in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition that was talking about a link between aspartame and cancers. Now, again, they find it, you know, that it does affect rats at very high volumes, you know, drinking it all the time, eating it all the time, et cetera. We're not rats. But that study was also brought on by Harvard School of Public Health. Well, you know, Harvard's a pretty distinguished institution. Walter Willett is the head of the School of Public Health there. And he wanted to make sure that people understood. So they took back the study from the media. They were starting to release it, and then they said, actually, we're not so sure those conclusions are accurate. And Walter Willett came out as part of that team and said, I would disagree with my colleagues. I think it's important to think about that study. So again, a lot of these sweeteners and what they do to our bodies, and this linked it to cancer, has also been linked, aspartame has been linked to osteoporosis, leaching calcium out of the bones, et cetera. So there's things like that to sort of pay attention to outside of the fact that when we're trying to recalibrate our taste buds, it's the chemical and also emotional and psychological dependency on those things that we really need to help people knock out to find freedom in whole food.
Well, I've got a whole list of questions for you that I want to continue this conversation with after we come back from the break. Stay tuned. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
At LifeScape, we believe in a proactive approach to your health, or whole health, which is why we created the LifeScape Online Health Store. Browse our store for the best physician-recommended nutrition, skincare, and health-related products to fit any lifestyle and budget. Have your order shipped directly to your home or pick it up at our Scottsdale office. Our goal is to provide the most trusted products to enhance your health and beauty regimen. Visit LifeScapePremier.com/store today. LifeScape, whole health for a whole life.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
This is the EWN Radio Network.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we're talking with Amy Griffith with Embrace Health and Nutrition, and we're talking about sugar. We're talking about recalibrating your taste buds, and a couple of things that you said before the break, Amy, I want to just go back and touch on. One is you said you help people if they're ready. A lot of people say they're ready and they want to change, but they want it if it's going to be easy, if it's going to be quick. So how do you tell if people are ready, or how do you work with them to really get them through and over that hump?
That's a great question. And yeah, it's, you know, sometimes, and we all go through that at some point in our lives. We all have something, a goal we want to get to, and no matter how much we want it, there's sort of this inherent resistance often in the psyche that holds us back, and sometimes we don't even know what that is. I ask some questions at the beginning of when I work with people. I have a very, you know, we do an hour-long intake session where they have already filled out a six-page intake form that's very involved and very thoughtful, so it really helps them sort of to meditate on why they're here and what their goals are and what they really want to get done. And this isn't just me handing them pamphlets and telling them to stop eating wheat. This is really an engaged partnership between the two of us, and they're going to be putting in, you know, as much if not more effort than I am in me giving them materials and giving them support and providing them with that backbone and professionalism, and then they have to do the work. You know, it's like a personal trainer. I can't lift the weights for them. So we have a very gentle and a very candid conversation about where they are in their lives, and then also not putting shame around if they aren't ready. You know, making sure that there are certain things maybe in their lives that will be there to support them. And one of my clients came to me and she said, initially, when we started working together, she said, I'm not ready to cook yet. I'm not ready to delve into this myself yet. I need someone to cook for me and then sort of wean off that. And I want your guidance around who should cook for me and then touching base with you to sort of keep tabs on me to stay engaged and eventually being able to, you know, assemble snacks only for a week or 2 weeks. And check that off the list. And then maybe we'll work on breakfast. And then maybe we'll work on lunch. So piecing those things together so you're not just, you know, I don't just give people a menu plan if I don't feel like they're ready. And I've gotten to the point where I can read that about people. And I, you know, we talk through why I would think that they might not be as ready as maybe they would be if they were back from their trip to Mexico in 2 weeks. And they drop into that, and they really hear that, and they know that I'm on their side pretty quickly. I had another client, for example, this is a great example, where she had lost a child. She came to me, and we went through an intake, and at the very end, the last 5 minutes of her intake, because I was really trying to figure out what was holding her back. She needed to lose about 50 pounds, pre-diabetic, lots of pain and inflammation in the body, and she said, oh, and by the way, I do what I do with food because I lost my son about a year ago, and I can't move on from that. That was huge. That was a huge piece to see, okay, what are you doing to support that piece? Are you seeing, you know, a therapist? What are you doing to help with that, or what do you want to do right now? And she said, I don't want to talk about that. I just want to sort of distract myself away from that, and I need you to give me sort of these small items to distract me. So one of the things we did that I thought of was, she was coming home, she wasn't eating any breakfast, she was getting up at about 6 a.m., wouldn't eat until 11 a.m. That's a huge, just a major trauma on your metabolism and your blood sugar. So I didn't really say anything about that. I wanted her to sort of figure that out herself. The reason why she was doing this thing at the end of the day was because of the lack of breakfast. So what she was doing at 10 p.m., she was eating a whole pint of Ben and Jerry's ice cream, a whole pint, a couple times a week. Lots of sugar, lots of, you know, unnatural fat, just too too much. But that was her medicine. That was her emotional medicine. And she was trying to make up for all the calories she had not eaten at the start of the day. You know, breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So I said, oh, I love Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I love Chunky Monkey. I love those flavors. And when you say things like that to people, they calm down. You can see their mind say, oh, wow, she's not telling me I'm a terrible person. So it's little things like that that gain trust with people and really bring, you know, I'm a human being. I eat certain ways sometimes when I'm in the mood, because if, you know, not so great food for me is there and it smells good. I just don't eat it all the time. And I'm educated by my food. So what we did with her was we weaned off of that because she wanted to. Weaned off of that to half a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream a couple times a week, so then she saved the other half for the other days. And then we got all the way down to yogurt and berries at night. And she'd freeze the yogurt so it kind of had that texture and that temperature, and then sprinkled it with some chocolate chips and berries. And then about a month later, after we'd sort of weaned her off that, she said, you know, I think I'm grabbing for all that food at 10 o'clock because I'm not eating breakfast. And I said, you know, I think that's probably right. So she came to that conclusion herself, which was so powerful. If I had told her that from the beginning, eyes would have glazed over, and she would have felt shamed from that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she said, I want to know what to eat for breakfast. Tell me what to eat. I'll do it. Let's work on that for the next month. So powerful. She started losing 2 or 3 pounds. At first, she lost like 5 pounds in the first week, I think, just from inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Just from water weight gain, probably. That's sort of what happens. And then you can kind of even out, start losing about 2 pounds a week. That's always what my goal is with people. It's what's healthy and what's sustainable. So it was a huge aha moment for me in how to drop in and really meet people where they are and help them get ready over time if they're not ready then, or revisit what they need to do when they are ready.
And I love that you worked with them and helped them find solutions that fit, like freezing the yogurt, because so it's got a similar texture and consistency. And then also with the person who said she wasn't ready to start cooking yet, to find solutions to work around that. Because it's really important for people to understand what they need. I know for me, part of eating is I like foods that are crunchy. So what I find, and you know, I've done this from really paying attention to what I eat, is if I eat soup and don't have something crunchy, I'm not satisfied. Even though I'm full, I'm not satisfied. So just by adding something a little crunchy or just crumbling some crackers, it gives me that crunch, which makes all the difference. So finding those couple of things that someone really needs, or they know that you make that difference, can begin to shift how much you eat and what you eat also.
Absolutely.
We talked about recalibrating your taste buds and for doing that for sugar, but that also works for salt and fat too.
Absolutely. And you know, salt is just sort of that counterpoint with sugar of that need for very salty things, how it triggers the brain. I haven't seen, you know, hard evidence of how it does compared to sugar and that hitting that pleasure point. But, you know, when we go out to eat at restaurants, there's definitely a shift in taste, and what is added to our food that we might not know in the back of the house is added to give us a hyper savory flavor. So absolutely, and the same sort of technique can go towards helping to recalibrate when you're sort of stripping out a lot of those flavor enhancers, including savory and salty ones, and also the kind of salt, you know, iodized salt versus mineral salt. Mineral salt, which has not been iodized or it has not been refined, can be a lot more salty, so we don't need as much of it, and it has added minerals to it. But yeah, recalibrating the taste buds around the need for any taste or texture that might not be serving you, or something like fat, and also I could sort of linking fat to fats that are salty, or the fried foods, things of that nature that are, there's a need for that very salty, you know, oily, yummy, crunchy, you know, there's this restaurant in town that makes this fried chicken that is like maple, salt and pepper, buttermilk fried chicken, and it's just, there's so much about that, the fry around the chicken, that's just so addictive. I mean, you could have that every day. After you eat it, you feel terrible. But, you know, every once in a while, it's great to have. And also, you really appreciate it. When you don't eat those things all the time and you have it once in a blue moon, you really enjoy it and appreciate it.
And one of the things that we teach people in our Eat Great, Live Well program is to take 3 to 5 small bites. Take one, put your fork or spoon down, really enjoy it, savor the flavor, really taste it, and then have the next one. And then stop and have a conversation, take a break. And if you want more, come back after 15 minutes and take a little bit more. But make sure you pay attention to how that tastes, because most of the time it's not as sweet. It's really not satisfying why they're eating it. But if you eat it all at the same time, you don't realize that it's losing that intense, powerful flavor.
Yeah, that's a great point. I also did an exercise in that same vein with some of my clients where I give them a Hershey Kiss, one Hershey Kiss, and then I give them a piece of really sort of high-quality, dense chocolate that's a lot more high-quality than Hershey's and maybe has a higher cocoa mass or more of the actual chocolate behind it. And with both of those chocolates, sort of comparing the taste and the enjoyment of both of those, we open the packaging of the chocolate. We smell it. We look at it. We smell it again. We put it on our tongue. We roll it around in our mouths. We really think about what that tastes like. And the comparison between the Hershey Kiss and the really good chocolate, or, you know, the not-so-great chocolate that might be a little bit cheaper, might not have as much chocolate in it, versus the really dense chocolate that can give you that satisfaction. Like, wow, all I need is that one little square of that really good chocolate, and I'm really enjoying it, and then I'm done. So, it's sort of looking at the food, engaging with the food, and like you said, it's that, what you just described of when you're encouraging people to take time to eat their food is that mindfulness behind food. We hear that word a lot now, mindful meditation and mindful eating, and just really enjoying what you're eating, thinking about what you're eating, maybe thinking about where it comes from, thinking about who you're eating with and the enjoyment behind that. I think
absolutely. We need to take our final break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about artificial sweeteners and just sugar in general. But I know that you shared it with me. I know you've got a recipe for making your own chocolate. So I'd like you to share that when we come back from the break. This is Janelle McCauley, and you're listening to Eat Great, Live Well Radio.
Do you struggle with your weight or your health? Do you wish you had more energy to do the things you really want to do? Are you tired of counting calories and fad dieting? Do you want to eat your favorite foods and not feel guilty? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then the Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program is the answer for you. Being healthy isn't about fad dieting, feeling guilty, or eating nothing but tofu and wheatgrass. It's about making small, healthy choices that add up over time to create life-changing transformation for you and your family. The Eat Great, Live Well personalized wellness program will show you how easy it is to be healthy, happy, and well-fed all at the same time. Visit eatgreatlivewell.com for more information or to enroll in this life-changing program. You deserve to both eat great and live well. Check it out today at eatgreatlivewell.com.
Welcome back to Eat Great, Live Well Radio. I'm your host, Janelle McCauley, and today we've been talking with Amy Griffith with Embrace Health and Nutrition, and have got a great conversation about sugar, about how it affects your body, and how you can take more control and recalibrate your taste buds. Before the break, we were talking about chocolate, and I know that Amy's got a great, easy recipe for chocolate, so if you could share that with us, Amy.
Yeah, so if you take a half of a cup of gently melted coconut oil and half a cup of gently melted cocoa butter, so that's essentially what makes the mass of a chocolate bar and the hardness of the chocolate bar, and it's a white, it looks like white chocolate, but that's the cocoa butter. And then two tablespoons of raw honey. It's not that much, but if you have a very dense, really good honey, that's really all you need, and you might need to soften it a little bit if it's very, very thick. And then a cup of cocoa powder, and that's a lot of cocoa powder. That'll be the real bulk of the recipe. And then you just kind of melt all those together, and then I either spread them out on a cookie sheet to make sort of a bark. I might add in some peppermint extract one or two drops of peppermint extract if I want sort of a minty chocolate. You could add anything you want. You could add dried cherries or dried blueberries or nuts or seeds. Sometimes chia seeds can add a nice crunch, maybe some coconut flakes, and then stick in the freezer or the fridge, freezer for a couple hours, and then you can kind of break it up into bark. And it'll really give you this satisfying, very dense, yummy, sweet, but not too sweet, you know, dark chocolate bar. And I will post that chocolate recipe up on my blog, which is on my website. And that website is Embrace, H as in Harry, N as in Nancy, embracehn.com.
Perfect. That'll be great. I'm going to have to try that chocolate recipe. One of the issues today is how much sugar should we consume? So I think it would be a great place to kind of in our conversation as we're winding down to really talk about for a minute how much sugar people should have and how they can kind of keep track of that in an easy way so it's not complicated.
Yeah, and it's hard to say just because everybody's very different and the amount of calories people need is different according to their activity level and their body type and their metabolism. And there's sort of these key recommendations. The American Heart Association, for example, says that we should get a maximum amount of, and this is added sugar. So this is not, doesn't take into account, because there's sugar in a lot of things. There's sugar, mm-hmm. You know, vegetables are carbs. Fruits are carbs. So outside of the servings of vegetables and fruits that are recommended, the amount of added sugar is what I'll focus on. And for men, that's about 150 calories per day of added sugar, or about 9 teaspoons. And for women, that's 100 calories per day that's recommended of added sugar, and that's about 6 teaspoons. Now, to put this into perspective, a can of Coke contains about 140 calories from sugar. So if you're a woman and you have one can of Coke per day, that's your max, and you're going 40 calories over the amount of sugar, or maybe 1 or 2 teaspoons over the amount of sugar you should have per day. And then if you think about other things that you're eating that might have that added sugar, you know, that can really add up. That's where we also talk about empty calories, or if we're drinking fruit juice or Coke or alcohol, you know, there's nothing really nutritious about those foods, and there's no protein or fat or healthy fat to kind of slow down how that sugar affects our body. So it's really just sugar that's going straight into the bloodstream. Once it hits your mouth, it's already glucose, and it can really spike our blood sugar very quickly. And then also nutrition facts on the back of food labels are pretty confusing, because you've got line items there that are highlighted. For example, there's total carbohydrates, and then that's breaking down into dietary fiber, and it might say insoluble and soluble, but usually it's just dietary fiber. We love fiber. So take whatever grams of fiber is in that food and toss it to the side, because that's a great, you know, we don't worry about that as far as carbs. But then you want to look at the sugars under there and how much sugars are in that a serving of that. So, you know, if you have a fruit juice and the serving size is half of that bottle of fruit juice, well, then you have to assume that if you do drink that whole bottle, which most people probably would, you have to, you know, multiply that sugar, the grams of sugar, added sugar in there, by 2. So, again, you know, if anyone has questions about this, please feel free to reach me on my website, and I can sort of analyze for your body how much sugar you might need. But for men, 9 teaspoons of added sugar a day. Women, 6 teaspoons. Of added sugar a day outside of what is recommended of the total carbohydrates that you're eating for your body. And it depends on your body.
And that's absolutely a great place to start. So can you give us just 1 or 2 real simple tips for cutting added sugar without sacrificing flavor?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it would be helpful to sort of take stock of your day and think about where you have sugar added to certain things in your day, what a typical day might be, and what some of those habits that you have every day are, and if there's sugar involved. So, for example, if we're drinking coffee and if we're adding sugar to our coffee, and just thinking about, hey, is this a tablespoon? Is this, you know, 1/4 cup of sugar? How much is this? And then thinking about, you know, how much do I really need in this coffee to make it satisfying? And then also thinking about what we're drinking throughout the day. I think a lot of added sugar can hide in things like smart water and vitamin water and juices And so maybe doing a little research online and thinking, okay, how much sugar is in orange juice? And I love orange juice. Maybe I want that orange juice, but I have, you know, a fourth a cup of it instead of a cup and a half of it or 12 ounces of it. So really taking the time to look at a couple of the things that are in your day that you could maybe cut back even by a fourth or a half and not completely taking out of your life, because that would feel very, you know, that would be too much depravity, but just enough where you're not giving yourself such an overload of sugar and taking inventory of that day. And that might really empower the person to really take charge of where they can find themselves the ways to cut back on sugar consumption throughout the day, added sugar consumption.
That's great to start that awareness. And one other thing I want to ask you just about real quickly, and then I know you're going to share the recipes, but turmeric, you talked about that for inflammation, and just share just a little bit about that, and then we'll go ahead, and I know you're going to share your recipes for everyone online, and we're going to tell them how they can get that.
Yeah, absolutely. So turmeric is one of those foods or spices that maybe people have seen more in the media and in the medical world lately as, you know, this medicinal food. It's used a lot in cooking in India and other Asian countries, and it's a very powerful flavor. It's usually used in curries and different, you know, maybe Thai food and Indian food. But there is a chemical in it called curcumin that has been shown in some studies to help with inflammatory agents in the body and helping to sort of cool and soothe the body if it's inflamed or if people feel like they're always kind of bloated or they're always in pain or they have joint pain. That could be related to possibly overconsumption of sugar and to the inflammation that's going on. Heart disease can also be related to inflammation, not necessarily clogged arteries, but the tissue around the arteries, constricting the arteries and inflaming the arteries. So turmeric, I just like to introduce to people, and if they're not already cooking it, you know, traditionally in a savory dish, to really kind of step outside the box and thinking about making a milkshake out of it. So one of the recipes I like to give people, especially if they're looking for quick and easy things to do after a workout for some good protein and healthy fat, or in the morning for a quick smoothie recipe, it's my sweet turmeric milkshake. And you can either use any kind of milk you want. I particularly like coconut milk with this because it kind of adds to the flavor, the exotic flavor of the whole thing. So about a half cup coconut milk, maybe a half a cup of water or coconut water. And I do one really ripe banana that I usually keep frozen. You could do unfrozen or do frozen just so it's that milkshake frothiness. Some almond butter, a tablespoon of almond butter, and then just about a half a teaspoon, if that, or a fourth teaspoon, if you like to try turmeric to start and ease into it, of turmeric powder. And you blend that up and maybe add some ice if you want even more of a frothiness to your milkshake. And you might be very surprised by what you taste. The sweet is coming from the banana. And usually that's, especially if you have coconut water with that or coconut milk with that, it's sweet enough. I've had a lot of clients say, wow, that's really interesting. I didn't need to add any honey or any added sugar or any dates or anything. The banana was just sweet enough, especially if it's ripe, because it has a higher sugar content when it's ripe. So that's a surprising recipe that a lot of people really enjoy, and they can get that link to the inflammation and psychologically start thinking about how to eat better, lower their sugar to help with that inflammation.
And that's a great reminder also to really taste our food and our recipes before we add sugar, because oftentimes if you put the right combination of flavors together, you don't need to add sugar, or if you do, you don't need to add nearly as much as maybe a recipe calls for or that you think you do. So, you know, to taste it first.
Absolutely.
We've had a great conversation today about sugar and how to recalibrate your taste buds. How can our listeners get in touch with you or get more information from you and get some of your wonderful recipes?
Yeah, so my website has anything and everything linked to it. My blog is linked to my website. I have a great Pinterest page where I post all kinds of, you know, ideas for the recipes that I develop or other ideas from other websites and other health and wellness people or other resources that I really enjoy that I just love Pinterest. I could sit on it all day. It's so much fun. I also have a Facebook page where there's a lot of information, and all those links are on my website, Embrace, E-M-B-R-A-C-E-H, as in Harry and as in Nancy, embracehn.com.
Perfect, and we'll put a link to that on our Eat Great, Live Well radio page. I'd like to ask each of our guests to give our listeners just one action item that they can implement in the next week to start creating a healthy future for themselves and those they love. So what would you like to share?
Yeah, I think that's a great end to the conversation as well. My end-all, be-all advice is to eat breakfast. So many people that I see who come into my office either with metabolic deficiencies or blood sugar issues are letting their bodies go a little too long or a lot too long in the morning without eating breakfast, without eating anything, or even, you know, just drinking some coffee and being on the go. We're all very busy people. We all need to get to work. We all love our sleep. So sometimes hard to get up just, you know, it would only really take 10 to 15 minutes earlier, and even assembling something, even having, you know, a hard-boiled egg and a piece of fruit, something to kind of ground the body in the morning and to support the metabolism. Your metabolism is rearing to go in the morning. It needs fuel. It's been fasting for many hours naturally at night. So it's really excited to eat. If someone's a little bit nauseous, that might mean that their digestive system's a little slow, needs a little help. They can have some lemon and water that can really stimulate the digestive system and stimulate the liver. But eating breakfast within an hour of waking, and ideally including some protein. So that's where you have, you know, if you have some oatmeal with nuts and some fruit, have a hard-boiled egg on the side. Maybe you love yogurt, have some plain, you know, unsweetened 1 or 2% yogurt topped with fruit and nuts, and maybe an egg on the side as well, or a piece of fruit. Or even think outside the box. I like to encourage people to have dinner for breakfast. So sometimes I'll have ground turkey and maybe some slices of a sweet potato and some sautéed greens on the side. And maybe I've already made that ground turkey the night before, and so I just need to reheat it. And that's a pretty savory breakfast, but we want to be eating, if we can, building up to about 300 to 500 calories for breakfast. And if we can't do that, that's okay, just at least having a snack within an hour of waking up. And I have a bunch of other breakfast ideas if people have questions about that and how that can really work into their school, smoothie ideas, et cetera. But if someone tries that for a week, I could guarantee that they could really see a difference in energy. You know, 3 p.m. slump, not having to grab for that coffee and that cookie, but really having a sustained amount of energy throughout the day.
Thank you for sharing that. And I want to thank you for being with us today and really starting that conversation on sugar and some simple things that people can do to shift what they're eating and really learn and pay attention to how much sugar they're eating.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure, Janelle.
You're welcome. I want to thank everyone for spending the last hour with me. Until next week, remember that even small changes you make can make a positive difference on your health and your life. Healthy choices you make every day add up over time to create a healthy future for yourselves and your family. Be sure to visit us at Eat Great, Live Well Radio and link to Facebook, and let's continue the conversation. Let us know your questions and how we can support you. Be sure to join me each and every week as we continue to build a healthy relationship with food together. Bye-bye for now.